The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Tom Fornelli, that's Danny Cannell, that's Bud Elliott. I'm Chip Patterson, coming to you live at youtube.com/Cover3 and all across the 24/7 Sports Facebook Network. Thanks for hanging out. Just come on in, just give a nice little high five and maybe like a little fist boom, a boom to that the subscribe, the like, because if you subscribe, then you can come join us in the chat. And if you come join us in the chat, then you can join Kyle, Chase, Chris, and more who already have questions in that we are going to answer here in this mailbag episode. That's right, because here in 2023, we are upgrading. This is a live interaction mailbag. You can get a question in by leaving us a 5-star review and put the question in the review. We'll add it to the big old bag of mail, tackle it in a future mailbag episode. But if you want to come hang out and watch live, if you want to come in even before the show starts and drop your question in the chat, it will get our attention and we might be able to get to it in the time that we have today. Before we get out of here, we are going to talk about that New York Times op-ed from Jack Swarbrick and Father John Jenkins from Notre Dame, as they want to talk about the future of college athletics, pairs nicely with a fine Chianti and a question about federal NIL laws that did come in from the 5-star mailbag. Also, the American Athletic Conference after conference realignment. What do we expect in 2023? And as you can see from the headline here on youtube.com/cover3, any chance that Graham Mertz-led Florida Gators are going to have a better offense than Jordan Travis and the Noles? We will get to that and much more. But let's start with some fun ones here right off the bat from Kyle. He jumped in the chat early. He had a question. Are the 2023 Michigan Wolverines a legitimate national title contender?
Yeah.
Yes.
They've made the playoff 2 years in a row.
Oh, a bub and the mute button. A tradition unlike any other.
I see. I got the sneeze and I was doing the right thing, hitting the sneeze button, the cough button. All right. How do you define it? Right. Like, is that any team that we could see just if everything goes right or if just a lot of things go right, they could win it? Certainly. Like, I think that Michigan recruits a high enough quality of player that if things go right, and I would say that is like some of the new coaching stuff continues to work out and JJ McCarthy takes a step forward in terms of reading defenses, delivering the ball more on time, then yeah, they could absolutely do it for sure. I mean, it's not like there's any team out there that has just certainty at every spot. And Michigan is a really good team.
I mean, they're the fifth best title odds right now. Last year, congrats to TCU. They beat them, but Michigan had an awful start to that game and almost still came back. And you can make an argument they should have won. They would have been a better matchup, and it's easy to say that now. And maybe they wouldn't have been a better matchup because
score would have been closer.
That matchup
closer. Yeah,
I don't think Georgia would have sweat too much, but I think it would have been closer. Yeah,
right. So I mean, but we saw them get smoked in the Orange Bowl 2 years mm-hmm. ago too. But I think they were a better team last year. But I think they're going to continue to get better. I think McCarthy is going to continue to get better. I think they're going to gain more confidence, and it's They've owned Ohio State the last 2 years, and there's a chance you can get to it again. You know, that's always an option that's on the table. And getting there is half the battle. Like one game scenario, what if Georgia has their bad game, you know, which doesn't seem like they have on the big stage, but it's always a possibility. So I say, yeah, it's on the table.
Do you have that odds board in front of you right now? Because I was thinking that the difference between are you a legitimate national title contender and am I picking you to win the national championship are two different conversations, because the right off the top of my head, I came up with four teams that I would pick to win the national championship before I would get to Michigan. If we were doing a pick for a national championship, a draft for national championship contenders, and I had the fifth pick and Georgia was gone and Ohio State was gone and Alabama was gone and USC was gone, then Michigan would be next in line. So to me, are you a contender? Yes, I just have other teams that I would pick to not only make the playoff, but win the two games in the playoff before I get to Michigan.
So you would take USC over Michigan for the playoff odds?
For variance purposes, yes.
Okay. I think that the upside with Caleb. Yeah. Sure.
Caleb Williams, higher ceiling. And you are like, that is a USC is the everything has to come together perfectly scenario, even just getting out of the Pac-12, without a doubt. But just sort of my personal thought there.
Go ahead, Tom.
Long-standing principle, period. Never bet a Michigan future on anything. You never get proper odds for Michigan because the fan base is so huge and they all bet that you're never going to get actual market value on Michigan doing anything. So, like, even when Michigan is not a national title contender, you're only getting like 8-1 on them.
So when we do that title contender draft, right? First round is usually like, damn it, I can't believe you picked him. That's the team I really think is going to win it. Snake it around. Next couple picks, you're generally like, okay, if things go right, they could certainly take down the trophy. Next round is like, they need a lot of stuff to go right. And then fourth round is generally, okay, they need a lot of stuff to go right on their own team. And then they need a couple other key guys, probably within their own division or league, to get hurt, to allow them to get access.
All right. Let's thank you, Kyle, for jumping in with the question. This next one also from the chat, KTK, question from the mailbag. In the Alabama offense, can Jalen Milroe take the next step with Tommy Rees as offensive coordinator? I'm behind Ty Simpson in a pro-style offense, but can Jalen Milroe refine his craft and excel?
Are we assuming the question's asking about this year or just ever?
It's got to be for this year because the Nick Saban just said, all right, so we talked obviously a lot about Nick Saban earlier in the week. Nick Saban has indicated that he feels really good about a lot of the positions around the quarterback. He seems like he is very interested in the development of the quarterback position because he feels good about everything else. And if they can get quality play at the quarterback position, I think he will feel confident. And reading between the lines, it seems like there's still work to be done there. Uncertainty, sure, especially with the change at offensive coordinator. But he said, Jalen Milroe played in some critical game situations and came up with some big plays in critical game situations. This is from Saban. I'm paraphrasing. He said he did it a little bit differently than Bryce did, AKA running the ball.
That's an understatement.
Yeah. And then he said, Ty Simpson, we feel good about the development he made, but he didn't play in any critical game situations. So we haven't even seen what he looks like out there. So what do we expect from the development of that quarterback position? And I do think we have to go immediate future here because that's what's most important.
I think Ty Simpson's playing, week one. I mean, I don't think Tommy Rees, has he shown a quarterback run heavy offensive tendency?
They ran the backup last year some.
He did it with Buckner when Buckner was first coming along, kind of like as a change of pace behind, what's his name? Ian Book ran a lot. Like he's had plenty of that run game with his QB. Is that what his preferred style is? I don't think so. I think he's done it when he's had to. So I think he can make it work with it. I just think that, if you get an honest answer from him of what his ideal quarterback looks like, Ty Simpson is probably closer to that ideal than Jalen Milroe.
I mean, if you're Tommy Rees, you're coming into a system. What have they been, top 3-4 in the country in offense since Lane Kiffin took over? Like this is a 7 or 8 year run, right? It's been that long where they've had first round draft picks at quarterback and they've been just churning out offensive production like we haven't seen. I think if Milroe's under center, you're going to see a return to the control, like totally different style. Now, maybe that's where the game has changed, where and it's at the NFL level too. We're seeing this with NFL teams willing to just run their quarterback a ton. But that to me would be a completely different looking offense than what they've run over the last 7 or 8 years. And I think what Tommy Rees wants to run, you know, but I think it's going to be interesting. Do you play multiple quarterbacks in the first couple games? We've talked a lot about that with other schools, with competitions. And Michigan, that to me, when a coach says we haven't seen him, you know, play much, like at least Milroe's taking those snaps. So he's probably, at least, you know, the floor. He's like, can, you know, but it wasn't great. But I think you want to see, because I've seen it happen all the time. Guys light it up in practice. They look awesome. They win a quarterback competition in scrimmages. And then when the season starts and the lights are on and the pressure's on, they look like a completely different person. So that's why I do think Saban is truly not worried. I mean, they're going to be fine, but he's like, I don't know. You know, I don't know what I'm getting. No one does.
We did a video on this, by the way, like why coaches routinely pick the wrong quarterback coming out of camp. And there are some really big time notable examples. I mean, Cam Rising, for instance, right, did not win the job based on whatever you're doing in practice. And it's just hard to simulate game conditions of practice, even when you quote unquote turn it on and take the protective jersey off. I don't know, guys. Like, I look, Milroe is certainly a really talented kid. I lean Simpson, but honestly, I talk to some people there at Bama who think it'll be Simpson, but they don't say that with their chest. Mm. They really think, like, which I don't know. Does that mean that they think Milroe is improving and is better?
Yes, has to.
Or does it mean that Simpson is not the goods? I don't know. Like, but I think a lot of people are writing Simpson in ink, and maybe they should be, but I don't think the people I'm talking to are BSing for the purpose of like trying to keep Milroe from transferring after the spring. Right. I mean, if you're Nick, do you actually name a starter coming out of spring? I try to take this thing to fall camp just to, you know, maybe keep these kids on the roster.
Don't ever forget the legend of Cooper Batman, a.k.a. Cooper Bateman, and the days when Nick Saban would be having multiple starters until the Ole Miss game in, like, week four. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this – it until we hit that
– Can't do that anymore, though, Chip. Yeah, until, play the big games right off the bat.
Yeah, until we started to hit a different scheduling philosophy from Alabama and the era of a Tua, of a Bryce Young, of a Mac Jones – we used to have Alabama dropping, remember, four oars on the Alabama depth chart? Like, there is some precedent from that. We just have to go way back in the time machine to be able to get that.
Do you remember the days where it's like you'd get all excited for the college football season to finally arrive and start, and then every game on Saturday would just be, you know, Alabama versus Southeast Louisiana State Technical Institute, like for 4 weeks, like you'd be all excited, and then it'd be nothing but 63-0 games for a month before the real one started.
Hey, I'm appreciative, right? We get these bangers early on. All right, and this kids one
these days don't know the struggle we went through.
If you were following the Cover 3 podcast on Twitter at Cover 3 Podcast, then every now and then there's an opportunity for you to, you know, win a little something. Maybe it is something tangible, or maybe it is intangible, like getting your question forwarded right to the front of the show. And that's exactly what we had right here. You got a question right on Twitter. You get your question answered in the mailbag. It's a two-parter. The first one: who wins a 2-on-2 pickup game to 21, Chip and Danny versus Tom and Bud?
Did anybody play basketball in high school?
All right. That doesn't – no, listen. It's Chip and Danny all day, and it's because we know our roles, okay? At some point, Tom and Bud have to make a decision of who's going to go for it, okay? In the critical possession, in the got-to-have-it possession, there is no question. And I have always been great on a basketball team, from the youth to the adult rec level, of knowing my role and being able to understand spacing and being able to understand good cuts. If I'm open, I shoot it. I get a couple good looks at the rim.
Real with ball gym right here.
Listen, I'm just telling you that when it comes time for that possession, there is no question. Danny and Chip, we know our roles. We know who's got to take that shot.
This question ACC is massively...
We're Tobacco Road roots, you know, with Chip's North Carolina ties. I went to Carolina basketball school about five years in a row, stayed at Granville Towers, played at the Dean Dome. I actually was offered a scholarship to Duke. when Tommy Amaker came to our school and called me out of class and had a little meeting. And then later I got a letter from Duke that said, we are no longer offering you that scholarship. I don't know if there was a mix up in names or what happened.
Your grades. You're not coming here.
Jay Billis got involved.
That is a true story, by the way. That is a true story. Somehow there was a mix up. I did go to Duke basketball camp too, but I think we could take them. The only question is, what would the matchups be? Like, is it size? Like, cause I'm probably the tallest by a little bit over Bud. So is it Bud versus Danny and then Chip versus Tom? Because I could see Tom trying to back down Chip in the lane, right, just body him up. You know, like, but I think Chip is holding up.
Tom, how tall are you?
6'2" and a half.
Okay. Yeah. So Tom's a little bit taller than I am. No shoes. I'm 6'1" and 7/8". So, like, we actually use me. I'll go stand. These kids that don't want to measure in at some of these camps and combines, I'll go stand next to them and pretend I'm like looking at something on my phone. And if they're 6'4", we know they're not really 6'4", you know, if they're shorter than me. Right.
I would just say, like, when you watched Duke, Tennessee over the weekend, would you say Duke was the more talented team than Tennessee?
I didn't watch it. Sorry.
Oh, no, yeah. Yeah. They had more physical gifts.
I was going to say, but Tennessee won.
Bullied them.
Beating the poop out of him. I'm just saying, Bud and I might have a strategy. You might be catching a lot of elbows to the ribs and the face as me and Bud are just getting those rebounds. That's all.
Yeah. If we take Chip out, it's 2-on-1. I mean, no, I think they would. I mean, what do we play to 21?
Yeah. Ones and twos, swarm everything, havoc defense. I got some long arms that I can get in there, start poking the ball out. I will dive on the floor.
Tom has to carry this team. I am not a good basketball player. I've never played competitive basketball. Like, I played, you know, like a little bit of pickup, you know, high school type thing, neighborhood, but I'm not a good at hoops.
All right. Second part of the question is, which teams who are normally mediocre could turn into title contenders? Which teams, I guess this would be for the 2023 season or beyond, which teams who are normally mediocre could turn into a title contender with a Drake May or Caleb Williams? An example is Texas Tech, who with one of those could turn into a national title contender. Love the pod. It helps me through the dead season of college football.
That's a horrible example, though.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean,
can you imagine Texas Tech with like an all-time QB?
I don't know.
If only they had like a Patrick Mahomes type.
6-6. Essentially, they're asking for this year's TCU, right? I mean, that's,
or like, who's a quarterback?
No, it's a version of the what's the worst program Nick Saban could win a national title with type thing question, right? Like, what, like, what's the programs, like, what's the worst programs that you guys would actually draft in our playoff draft, which is 16 teams, right? Like, to go to win the national title if you put Caleb Williams or Drake May on that team.
Hmm.
You know who this Iowa becomes a title contender if you put Caleb Williams or Drake May on that team.
Wow. Yeah, agreed.
Because that defense is good enough to where, like, even if the offense is still stodgy and old school, you give them a quarterback who can make every throw in it, and that team is going to be really tough to beat.
It's a lot of faith that Brian Ferentz won't screw it up. But I think they do everything else really well.
Trying to think who else. I'm trying to think of like those good teams that aren't great, because I think that's what you need.
Kansas State, if you had a real difference maker at quarterback, like, they do everything else really well. They just never have a guy who's a dude, you know.
Wisconsin, Penn State.
Yeah. I mean, Wisconsin Russell Wilson team was really freaking good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Penn State's above mediocre, but I agree with the sentiment that, like, if you drop not USC. Man, if USC only had a Caleb Williams or a Drake May, they could really be a national title contender.
Colorado? Oh, just for the algorithm. Sorry.
Deion Sanders, Colorado.
Caleb Williams, Colorado, Deion Sanders?
Mm.
I think, too, like, it depends on the conference, because I think if you put an elite quarterback on a couple like mid to good tier SEC teams, you can't really consider them title contenders because they still have to get out of the SEC. So like, if you put Caleb Williams on Arkansas, is Arkansas suddenly winning the SEC West? I don't think so. I think that they're better, but I don't think they're winning the league.
Auburn.
Well, we saw
not it. Last year.
Is Auburn good enough elsewhere that
not yet?
Not yet. Because we don't look at them as like an elite defense. We look at them as like a serviceable defense, not a weakness.
They addressed the off. They got wide receiver like.
Auburn last year to me was a couple like some dudes, but not a great team. You know what I mean? Like they had guys at spots, but they just didn't have enough of them.
Notre Dame. But they're going to go in the top 16 anyway. If we're looking for teams that are sort of that back half of the top 25, you really just need to think about teams like Danny said, Wisconsin, right? Like teams that have a lot of physicality along the lines of scrimmage generally play a certain way, and then they are usually they just never have a stud quarterback. Wisconsin's a really good one. Baylor, yeah, actually, that's probably a pretty good one normally.
Let me reframe this then a different way. Is there a G5 program, maybe not a specific program, but if Caleb Williams or a Drake May or a QB of that caliber transfer to a G5 program, do you think they could win a national title?
No. Look, here's the other point I wanted to make about this, and we have a video coming about this. The G5 is getting worse. The best G5 teams keep getting drafted up to the P5. Like, look at the G5 10. When did TCU join?
12 and 14.
All right, so look at the G5 a decade ago versus what the G5 is now. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think we're going to have very many of these G5 darlings because they're 10 teams worse due to expansion than they used to be.
And I think it's the natural evolution of it becoming like minor league baseball, like AAA, AA, single A. If you're a player that rakes in single A, you get plucked and you get pulled up to double A. If you're a AAA player that doesn't get a cut, you're going to get sent down to double A. I mean, that's essentially what you see happen when you see a player is not getting playing time at Alabama or Georgia or pick your Power 5 school. He's not good enough. He goes down to a lower tier and all of a sudden he can play. Like, I just think it's a natural evolution that's going to take place.
If Caleb Williams had been on the undefeated UCF team,
Mackenzie Milton was perfect for that team. He balled. You know, like, are they that much better?
For the title that year? Because, I mean, they didn't play in the title. There was no playoff. Because they played LSU, right?
Auburn. Auburn, they beat the bowl. Who was the?
Because Auburn had lost.
They played Auburn.
LSU beat them the next year. Yeah.
So if that was the Auburn Sugar. That was Auburn in the Sugar Bowl or Peach Bowl?
Alabama.
And Auburn had beat Bama, who won the title. That was the correlation.
Yes. That was the double overtime to Devontae Smith.
I don't think that UCF team's beating either of those teams with Caleb Williams.
Yeah, they would not get smoked, but they could beat them, but I would not pick them to beat them.
Especially looking at the season ahead, I think that's our pretty much our list right there. Any others? Because the G5 argument would be then Tulane. But then is your Michael Pratt to Caleb Williams upgrade?
Here's one. Maybe somebody said this. A&M?
Yeah,
They're not G5, but like, you know, if you give Jimbo a quarterback that can run everything he actually wants to run, physically they match up very well with everybody else. You know, A&M right now is what? 5, 6, 7, 8,
maybe it's Connor Wigman with Bobby Petrino. I mean, that's where I think they're enticing.
We'll see how we'll go by how it feels.
Yeah. We'll take it by how it comes. What was that? I actually wrote it down. It was so good.
We'll play it by ear. We'll go see how it goes, whatever.
Was that Jimbo or Bobby talking about the quarterbacks?
Jimbo.
No, I didn't.
Oh, Chippers.
They're like, who will call the plays? And Jimbo's like, oh,
we'll take it as it goes, or we'll see. And then he was like, "But I'm not afraid to let somebody else call the plays." Like right after that, it was.
Oh my goodness!
Slightly defensive.
I mean, he had a protest too much.
But when I covered him as a beat writer, he had a 5-year plan to turnover play calling.
Literally.
Yeah. Here, I think I wrote about this. Let me find this.
It's a process, okay?
He had a 5-year plan. That continued to be a rolling 5-year plan. It was like the Mark Stoops contract of 5-year plans.
My offensive coordinator needs 5 years to study my playbook so he can know how to call it. And that's why my quarterback doesn't know how to do the playbook, because he only gets 4 years of eligibility.
There we go.
For all the talk about it, for all the talk about the comments at the, if you saw the video, it did look like Petrino was running the drills, like the whole offense, and Jimbo was kind of taking a back seat watching. So I think that's a good sign. He could also be, it absolutely could be his ego, but it could also be some gamesmanship. Like, hey, let's keep everybody guessing, you know?
5-year plan was from a press conference on November 29th. That was, Chip, remember that NC State game FSU lost where they had a really loaded team? It was in 2012, and they, like, Mike Glennon beat them. And,
yeah, the fumble on, like, at the goal line.
No, that was like 09 was 10. Or 08, 10. Yeah. So this is EJ Manuel airmails Chris Thompson on the wide open screen. And then after that game, Jimbo said he had a 5-year plan to let somebody else call the plays.
In 2012.
Just tremendous.
Yeah. Which is 11 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming up on the other side, we mentioned it at the top of the show. There's a very interesting New York Times op-ed from the Notre Dame athletic director discussing the future of college athletics and name, image, and likeness. And the 5-star mailbag, Jake wants to know something similar. We'll tackle all things NIL and the future of big-time college athletics and more
next.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast, a reminder that we are up as a finalist for the Sports Podcast Award. We are including the links in the episode description here on YouTube. We are including the links in the episode description on the audio side so that you can go and vote. Voting ends April 6th. We need you. It is your support that has gotten us all the way to being a finalist for the Best American Football Podcast category in the Sports Podcast Awards. We need you to go and vote. We thank you in advance. QR code on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. Link in the description on YouTube and on the audio side. As always, we don't get to this point without you being a part of the family as well. So thank you so much for your support. Let's push this across the finish line. All right, back to the 5-star mailbag. This question comes from Jake. From a weekly listener, love the show, truly a highlight every week. I'll keep my question short. I know NIL has been left up to the schools and the states, and honestly, it seems really out of control. I've seen some bipartisan talks about federal NIL laws, but no real action. Are you guys in support of federal laws for NIL? What would NIL laws even look like? Love the show, Jake.
This op-ed from Swarbrick in the New York Times, was it in his drafts and he forgot to send it? Like, because it seems like a take that's about a year old, right? Or yeah. It's a take that's been going on for 6 or 7 or 50 years. Like, it just seems like, and a lot of it's very much Captain Obvious.
It's like, it's, I mean, pretty rich coming from a school that has its own TV contract. Right. And from a guy that's made millions of bucks off unpaid college athletes. I don't think they're going to get a federal NIL bill passed. I talked to somebody about this the other day, and I think the optimism on this is unwarranted. I think you have several Republicans who will not vote for this because they don't feel like it's a federal issue. And you can have almost pretty good certainty that almost all the Democrats are not going to vote for Tommy Tuberville's bill, because it basically is like, hey, let's treat the players like shit. So I don't think that they're going to get anything close to the current proposed version passed. Now, the things that they are trying to do with this, right, are prevent NIL from being used in recruiting, which basically is like, let's keep all the money that people want to give for ourselves through the booster clubs, which we can pay employees with. Speaking of employees, they want explicit acknowledgement that players are not employees, right? They want the antitrust exemption, and they also want players to prevent or to be prevented from suing for retroactive NIL. Those are kind of the four main things. And then they want preemption, which preemption means federal law is the law of the land. All your state laws that conflict with this don't count. That's the general like five things that they're trying to put through.
That's
from what I've read.
So Swarbrick wants, and he didn't say that this would specifically come from the federal legislation, but Swarbrick wants reporting on all NIL transactions. Jack Swarbrick wants.
Wasn't that supposed to be in originally? Wasn't that like in the original guidelines from like 2 years ago?
It's unenforceable.
I thought it was something we were all going to know. Like it was all going to be out front.
They don't have to tell you what coaches are making, but they have to tell you every single deal that a kid signs. Come on.
From a private university. Yeah, it's not enforceable. Like Swarbrick can want it till the cows come home, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, he wants reporting on transactions. He wants to require there to be transactions, a.k.a. Swarbrick says it is the school's obligation to ensure that any transaction between an athlete and a booster is a transaction which the athlete contributes NIL value and the compensation reflects, quote, reasonable market value. I am not. Is that price fixing? Yes.
That's why they want the antitrust.
Congress. He wants the NCAA to create policies, not guidelines, because that's right. Currently, there are policies, not guidelines. Guidelines, not policies, and he wants them to enforce. And then, like, he did that thing where he also rolled out a couple of things that he believes that the NCAA and college athletics should do that are probably not going to get a lot of pushback. He wants a national class miss policy that limits travel to avoid missing too many classes. Sounds good at heart, I guess. He wants a national medical trust fund for players who are injured playing college sports. Yeah, no one's going to say like no to that. There's just going to be someone says, okay, where's the money coming from? And then he wants to honor scholarship for athletes who wish to return and complete their degree. I feel like that happens a lot.
That's a school choice. Schools already do that.
So I'm glad, Bud, that you were able to bring in the expertise on the legal side of this, because I have never understood how it is of the interest of the United States Congress to create federal laws which will try to police the ongoing of college athletes being compensated, particularly in the wake of the Alston case, when you're dealing with a 9-0 decision by the Supreme Court, the high court of the land, in which some of the opinions from sitting Supreme Court justices very much picked apart the amateurism model.
Regulation for thee, not for me, is essentially what Swarbrick's article comes down to. Like, Notre Dame's a private university. He does not have to report what he makes, right? But he wants all these athletes to report what they make.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't have
from
to tell you
somebody who's not connected to Notre Dame. Yeah,
he just hired a new basketball coach yesterday. He does not have to tell you how much money he gave him to do so.
Yeah, and so the Democrats also have an NIL bill. Cory Booker and some other senators are involved with that one. I also think that's probably DOA. So the sides are very far apart on what's being proposed. And generally in the media, I think very recently too, like some people who are involved in the NIL space were like, yeah, this is going to get passed. And I was like, who's voting for this? And then about a month later, the guy texted me back. I was like, oh yeah, probably not happening, dude.
Do you think that there is enough momentum within the college sports industry for there to be changes to the way that, you know, NIL is like the process? Like if there are to be NCAA rules to be passed, or if, you know, as we're spinning forward and looking at the future of college athletics, if there would be some kind of, you know, regulation that's coming, or a way that the concerns of those who are freaking out are somewhat lessened.
I think it'll come through the courts and not through Congress, by the courts to saying eventually that these guys are employees. And thus, like, if you want to reduce NIL quite a bit and make it simply about marketing value and not about their actual value to the roster, make them employees, right? I think that the courts will probably force their hand. Like, if I had to bet on it, I think that they'll be ruled employees long before we get federal NIL bailout legislation and all this. This is kind of a pipe dream. And it's really smart PR, but for a couple of reasons. One, the NCAA now gets to be like, hey, Congress could, like, everybody loves blame Congress for not acting on stuff. The NCAA now gets to do that. Like, I don't think the NCAA really believes they're going to get this thing passed. I'd be kind of surprised if internally they actually think it will get passed. And number two, a lot of these guys who are proposing this stuff are dudes who have made a bunch of money off this game. And I don't think they really care about the sport 10 or 15 years from now. If you're Swarbrick, you just turned 69 years old. Get a couple more years of fat paychecks and then dip, right? Like, I think he's trying to make sure this model of revenue for him and his buddies continue for the next couple of years until he can just dip.
Mm. Do you think there's any idyllic, I've liked the way, you know, that, like, just looking at it from the purest standpoint of, oh, you know, it's supposed to be a pure sport. Is there any, I mean, I know it sounds delusional, but do you think there's any of that, or do you think it really isn't protecting the cronies and protecting the money?
Schwarberg actually tells on himself here. He goes, this is
amateurism. The thing about it being like a ridiculous.
He says these guys have always been getting paid like this. It just wasn't out in the public. We just did it under the table. Now we call it NIL. So he's not even pretending that they were amateurs behind the scenes. He just doesn't like the image of it. It's not even an idealistic thing. It's just PR.
He speaks out against amateurism in the piece. He said, this is from my notes. I apologize that it's not the exact quote. I've got a couple in here. Swarbrick does think that NCAA should not stick to a pure amateurism model. Said the NCAA has wasted time and wasted energy defending amateurism. And he called it, quote, a ridiculous proposition. In this piece, he is calling amateurism a ridiculous proposition. And this is from Swarbrick, quote, no one ever said that the babysitter's experience would be better if we didn't pay him or her.
I don't want them to be amateurs, but I also don't want them to be paid.
Because the NIL is best of both worlds for them. That's why I'm surprised they're fighting it and trying to put restrictions on it. Like, that's the dirty little secret in all of this, is that was a pretty good compromise for them. But now that they've seen, it's kind of, it's a lot. And I do think they wonder what it means for their pay. If people figure out, we should stop donating to the school and give it actually to players, which we're seeing happen. I think that's what they're more worried about.
I think that ridiculous proposition is actually a quote that's pulled from the Supreme Court opinion.
It might be.
I've heard that before. So it's either in somebody's brief or.
Because the one tone in Brett Kavanaugh, when he put his decision out there, and the Alston was, I mean, good luck to the NCAA forever not trying to pay him. Like, it's going to happen.
Follow-up question from the chat from David. Is the op-ed piece actually an admittance of having a subpar NIL program?
Yes.
That's a joke, I think. Maybe with some truth. Who knows? Jack Swarbrick, mad that he's getting outbid out here in these streets. Whoa, 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 whoa. We need to allow them to get some money, yes, but we can't handle these prices. Let's bring the price down. Okay.
He's trying to pay like Aldi prices for.
Shout out to Aldi. Not a sponsor, but he can be.
You can be. Just email Bud Elliott CFP@gmail.com.
All right. This next question is from the 5-star mailbag. It's from Ryan. He left a 5-star review, and in the review, he said, I was looking through friend of the show, Bill Connolly's most recent SP Plus projections, and could not help but notice that he projects Florida State to have the number 26 offense in 2023, notably behind number 22, Florida. So is there any chance that the Graham Mertz-led Gators field a better offense than Jordan Travis and the Noles in 2023?
Who have the numbers?
Bill Connolly, SP
Plus. Bill Connolly, SP Plus, offense only.
Clearly clueless. Has no idea what he's talking about because, I mean, it's possible. But if I'm looking at the quarterback situations and the overall talent situations on both of those offenses right now, those are preseason projections. I will guess that as the season goes along, and there's data to actually put in there based on the season, Florida's offense will not be ahead of Florida State's for very long. I have seen a lot of Graham Mertz. He might be an upgrade. He might be an upgrade on what they had. I can give him that, because at times he makes
upgrade nice over growth. A top five pick.
I'm just saying, consistency wise, like, he's not going to give you the ceiling, but the floor might not be as bad. But that ceiling is kind of important. And I do think that Graham Mertz is mostly average. And yeah, I don't think, I mean, they were in on, obviously the Rashada thing happened. I don't think they brought in Graham Mertz with the idea of him being our no doubt starter in 2023. I thought it was more depth and competition more than anything. So no, I don't see a world in which Florida's offense is better than Florida State's this year. I don't.
How does this, Bud, you're good with the analytics. I love Bill Connelly. He's great with his SP Plus. How would you explain this happening? Is it a collection of 4 and 5 star, like a deeper, a more talented on paper offense? Is that where you would explain it?
I think it's part of it's probably conference adjustments, right? Like, I know SP Plus thinks the ACC is terrible. And I mean, I kind of do too. You know, the SEC is obviously like really, really good, but I think that the conference adjustments that SP Plus uses are probably propping up Florida's offense there a little bit. And there's also sort of the trajectory, right? Like, Florida's offense did not get better as the season went on last year. It actually kind of got worse, but SP Plus is looking at the full season numbers. Whereas FSU's offense seemed to get better and better throughout the year as they kind of played together and integrated some parts, right? Like, they didn't score that many points against LSU. They really didn't score that many against NC State. If the question's asking any chance, sure, there's a chance. Right? Like, the cop-out answer here is injury, right? Quarterback goes down. Would you rather have Mertz or FSU's backups? I'd rather have Mertz. Like, he's a guy that had a lot of talent coming out, and he's much more proven than anybody on FSU's roster other than Jordan Travis, who I think is a really good college quarterback. I think I like FSU's receivers slightly more than Florida's. Both have very good backs. The other thing that would have to happen here is that Florida's offensive line is going to have to be a lot better than I think it is. I think that they lost a lot of important pieces there, both starters and depth. They also lost one of their top reserves, Cam Waits, to an Achilles. So I think his availability for this season is in doubt, because that happened in February, I think. If I recall with the timeline of us talking about that. So they took Damian George from Alabama, the right tackle who I think was going to get benched at Alabama, right? And they also took Keonta Goodwin from Kentucky, who, I understand why he's still a 4-star transfer rating, because I think his long-term potential is still there. I think he is raw as hell, and I would be surprised if he plays well for them this season. So, personally, I would not give Florida a good chance, if reasonable health across the board for both teams, of being better than the Noles on offense this year. Is it impossible? No, like, it's certainly possible. They just need certain guys to step up much earlier, and they need to unlock the 4-star physical tools that Graham Mertz has and help him become a much better processor quickly. We'll see. I kind of doubt it, but I guess it's
The season totals from the 1-2 punch of Montrell Johnson and Trevor Etienne were good.
Yeah.
That was one of them. There are only X number of times that a pair of running backs have each had this many yards in the SEC, like your classic game notes, little nuggets. By the end of the season, Florida was really starting to be able to boast that they had one of the best, versatile, multiple running back ground games in the SEC that had been putting up big numbers. Like, so that would be my hunch as to one reason why this is checking out. The then counter to that is, much like Bud said, the offensive line, which is losing 2 NFL draft picks and might not have everybody to fill those spots, then are you going to be able to get the same, ground production? I think would be my concern right there. So yeah. I'm going to say no. Ain't no cop-out answer. Gators ain't going to have a better offense than the Noles. Come on. It's SEC propaganda.
I don't think we take the question if he's like, will they? I think the interesting is like,
is there a chance?
The any chance. Yeah. And look, Florida wants to play bully ball. It's clear with the size of the O-lineman. Damian George is probably, I don't know what, 6'6 and a half, 350-ish. And Goodwin is a similar measurement. And the kid from Baylor is also really big. But man, like Chip said, they lose two guys in the NFL draft. They lose two offensive line transfers to USC, which is a better team than Florida is. They lose one of their best backups to Arkansas and will probably be a starter for Arkansas. And then Waits blows the Achilles. Like, O-line depth there for me is definitely a concern entering the season for the Gators. I really don't trust the backups they have.
All right, let's just real quick, we'll stay here. Chase from the chat. Love the show. Bud brought me over from the Nolcast. Been a loyal listener for a year now. What are your personal handicaps on Jordan Travis winning the Heisman?
I definitely wouldn't bet Jordan Travis to win the Heisman at the current odds. I said on the show, I took some FSU 150 and 100-1 on Barstool when they hung that. So that was quality. But I mean, 10-1 is not great value, honestly. Like he's a very popular pick. And I think the value this year is going to come from first time starters because everybody else, I think, is priced appropriately. I mean, I'm on a site that doesn't sponsor us right now, but it's the one that I pulled up. So, Caleb Williams plus 500, Jordan Travis plus 1,000, Drake May plus 1,200, Bo Nix plus 1,400. I think that the public nature of those guys and how proven they are is priced in at this point. So I don't think those are good bets to make, honestly. You kind of need to figure out the guys, and I like guys that are like 30 or 40-1 typically.
I would say if Florida State lost LSU and he dropped, would you take him at 20-1 after say he had an average game, one interception, zero touchdowns, Florida State loses, he goes to 20-1. Would you take him then? Or would you really want to wait and see if it went to 30-1? Like he'd have to have three interceptions and looks like it's done and then get back in.
Maybe, but it would depend. The thing is, what would he have to do down the stretch to get back in and actually win it, right?
Win out, win the ACC, beat Clemson.
Awesome while doing it.
Right, yeah, and be really, really awesome. I think the better option there is he plays his ass off against LSU, they lose, and then he goes to like 25-1. So at least you're like, hey, like it's a great game in a losing effort if you're looking for a scenario to bet this.
I'd rather put money on Florida State to win the ACC or like Florida State to do something else. Betting on an individual in Heisman is a tricky game. Yeah. If you have confidence.
Penn State.
I mean, there's certain guys that just won't win it. Like Quinshaw Judkins is a fine story and he's a decent player. Ole Miss running back is not going to win the Heisman.
Trevion Henderson's not going to win.
Right.
From Ohio State. And Blake Corum can be a finalist. I don't think Blake Corum's going to win the Heisman Trophy.
Like Joe Milton, 18-1.
Rich. I don't hate it,
I can see it. If they hung a Nussmeier at plus 20,000 or something like that, that would be interesting to me. Dudes who aren't even perceived to win the job coming out of camp. But you think they're the better quarterback? I haven't seen it hung yet.
sounds stressful. No thanks. Pass. Hey, I got to get back into my basic bag here in 2023. Flew too close to the sun in 2022. That's how you finished 2-25 over your last 3 weeks of locks. Coming up on the other side, looking ahead to 2023, things are going to look different in the American. So, the reshuffled order of power, who ends up winning that thing and who of the current membership might be the next to leave? That and more
next.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast, this question comes from the five-star mailbag. It comes from Houston, who says, what does the AAC look like with the exit of Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF? Winner predictions? Who's the next to leave? Thanks. Tulane's the easy pick to win. They just went knocked off USC in epic fashion. They are returning basically everybody except Spears and, of course, your defensive coordinator and Chris Hampton and some key players on that side of the ball. But with Michael Pratt back, with a couple good wide receivers back, and, of course, you held on to Willie Fritz, I could entertain an SMU argument, but I will not be picking any of the new arrivals from Conference USA. I think it is a one easy pick. Maybe you want to line up with Rhett Lashley here and the Mustangs. But that's kind of, I think, the first part of it.
Yeah, I think you're totally right on that. Man, I don't even know. I guess SMU would be my second pick, but like UAB, Charlotte, I think ECU takes a huge step back. Memphis could, Memphis could.
I had Memphis, but man, it was a rough year last year. But they were, they were right at the top of the conference not that long ago.
Never great when our big newsy offseason Memphis headline was we're not firing Ryan Silverfield.
And they lost the tight end Priest-Corn, and they lost like the really intriguing D tackle to Florida. So they lost some of their important guys. Yeah, Chip, it's interesting. Like, no, go ahead, Danny. Well,
Glenn in the chat put in UTSA, and I might have said yes till I saw him in their bowl game. Did not look great against a better conference champion. So I think eventually, I love Traylor. I think he's got a great quarterback. I just think that's going to be a bigger jump. I mean, Conference USA is a big jump to the American.
I agree with that. It was a big jump to the old American, but most of your best teams in the old American are gone. So it's certainly a jump. I mean, I'm not going to try to argue that it is not. But, I mean, UTSA's schedule, you got to play Houston, which is a non-con game. You get what? A road game's in gray on this? Okay, so you go to Temple, you host UAB, you go to FAU, you host ECU, you go to North Texas. That's not a huge trip. You host Rice, you host USF, and you finish at Tulane. I mean, there's a chance you come out of that with two losses. You get the right tiebreakers, you're in the title game.
Also, you have Frank Harris, but you're on your third offensive coordinator in as many years.
That's true.
Like, it's, I root for UTSA to hit the ground running just because it would be so much fun. Like, we have to pinch ourselves and remember the program's only, what, 30 years old?
Right, exactly.
Like, just like was born out of nowhere. Shout out to Larry Coker. You know, like, this is very much still a nascent program, and Traylor's a fantastic coach to be able to be the face of it. But it's going to be tough going up.
UCF is 30 years old too, aren't they? UCF started out of nowhere 30 years ago. I think they did, didn't they?
Because it used to be like Florida Tech, right? Or Florida A&T.
I just remember they were on our schedule and they had Dante Culpepper and they hit pretty hard. And I was like, these guys are pretty good. They're going to be good. And they were.
Yeah,
Culpepper was a legitimate like prospect coming out. He just didn't have academics to get into a major school.
Yeah.
All right, let's do one more real quick.
Did you see Anthony Richardson body height 40 vertical everything next to Culpepper?
No,
they were almost identical. All of them. I never remember Culpepper being that fast of a and that dynamic of a runner. They were almost identical. Not like height, weight, everything.
Like I played golf with Culpepper, well, in the men's league with Culpepper down in Fort Myers, I don't know, about a year ago. I kind of think AR just physically looks taller and leaner, but I mean, that's retired.
Well, I hope so. Not, Culpepper's in his 40s.
Right. Yeah. I'm just trying to think.
All right, we'll do one more. This question comes from George. He sent it to Tom. Hi, Tom. My name is George, a lad from across the pond in London, and I've been listening to the pod for a while. I would leave a 5-star review because I'm, but unfortunately, I'm a listener on Spotify. That's okay. We love all listeners. Why is there some emphasis in college football and the NFL on having a starting quarterback? If a team is fortunate enough to have 2 5-star recruits, why can't you use them both throughout the year against different defenses? Certainly, it would be a tactical advantage and disturb the opposition who are expecting a QB1. You can literally have one quarterback focusing all season on certain teams and the other on the rest. It might be more of a soccer mindset, but someone like Pep, Coop, Sir Alex changes the lineup all the time depending on the style of play. Rugby also often changed their fly half, which is a quarterback equivalent, to suit certain teams. Hope the above makes sense. Cheers, George.
Definitely makes sense. I get like it. I mean, so
I was about to say Brian Kelly and Isaac beat me to it. Brian Kelly had this schematic advantage. Unfortunately, he did it all within the same game. This is a little next level to be like, against these defenses, we're using this quarterback, and against these defenses, we're using this quarterback. That would be notable, I think.
First of all, good luck keeping them both on your team. Like 2 5-stars saying we're not going to play every day. Like, one of them's probably leaving, but on the rare case that you got two guys to agree to do it, maybe it was their freshman and they were competing and they were locked in, you know, season started. For me, I get the question. I think it's a very intriguing question. I think as a former quarterback, you want to find yourself in a rhythm of playing. And I know it's different, you know, coming in mid game and saying, all right, I'm starting this game versus the next week. But even within weeks, there's sort of a rhythm to the season and you want to feel like you're improving every single week and you're seeing different options. And you also want continuity as an offense. Like if you're giving different schemes because of the quarterback skill set, then I think your offense is going to be a little clunky too, because maybe one week you're really centered, you know, focused on running the football or running the triple option or whatever you were doing with this different style of quarterback. And then the other quarterback's asked to come in there and throw. I mean, that impacts timing, rhythm with both the pass game and the blocking fit. So I totally understand what he's saying. And I know that it gets used in other sports. I do think quarterback is just such a unique position that, I mean, I'm a firm believer in that if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. You know, like you've got to find somebody. I mean, Chris Leak and Tim Tebow, they were successful doing it, but that was more in game. You know, like we've seen two quarterbacks used in game, not like we're going to start one this week and one the next week. Although Harbaugh did that last year.
Remember a little guy by the name of Lamar Jackson was in like a 3-quarterback system as a freshman with Reggie Bonifon, who went on to be a wide receiver / running back, and Evan Bolin. Yeah, Lamar came out and won the job outright in the Music City Bowl with a win over Texas A&M, came back as a sophomore, was an absolute stud. But like, yeah, we've seen it, but it often seems to be because a coach is not confident enough that one quarterback is going to be able to do all of the things. And if you have one quarterback who can do all of the things, then you would like that one quarterback. And again, haven't played here, but to Danny's point, a wide receiver wants to know what that ball feels like. You know, wants to know exactly where it's going to be placed, wants to be able to have that chemistry going on with the person who's throwing the passes. So I like it as a specialized package type situation. You know, like in 3rd and goal, we might bring out this other guy because it stresses a defense and gives us another option. Or, you know, for a drive to create some, you know, disadvantage. But as it's being suggested, as I read it, I don't know if I would have quarterback one, go play 4 quarters, and then you're sitting for the next game just because the other defense is doing something different.
Like a year or two ago on the show, we did propose, like, if you're going to try to run the quarterback a ton at the NFL level, it makes sense to draft a couple of them on rookie deals because the offense you're going to run is similar enough, but you need to be prepared to chew through them kind of like you do running backs, right? But the college question, it's really interesting. It's so hard to get one good quarterback, man, much less two. You know, like that's tough. Hey, Michael Campbell in the chat. Have we dogged Notre Dame's receivers and skill talent for this upcoming year? I don't recall doing that. I thought we said they weren't any good last year.
I didn't.
He's posting the same question over and over again, which usually we don't acknowledge, but I don't know, man. I think they're going to be much better.
Well, I've got so much more to say about the university's athletic director and his and did you see the artwork that they put with that article too? If you want me to take this seriously as an op-ed, don't have a big cartoon smiley football sitting at a desk. Really, I am just it didn't anyway. We will be back on Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern time. So make sure that you subscribe. Come and join us live for that. Thanks to all of your questions. Don't worry if we didn't get to it. We have gotten it written off to the side. We've got it in the big old bag of mail for a future mailbag episode. And you can follow him on Twitter at BudElliott3. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Bud, thank you very much.
See you, Chip.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.